Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The holiday season is upon us, and with it, the season for the hopelessly romantic TV movies that have become a tradition for many during the month of December. Hallmark Channel's Christmas movies have become such a sappy little staple that the likes of even Netflix has now begun to imitate the art of the feel-good films of the season. One of the many at-home fans of the genre was Gwendolyn Heasley. She's a Naples author who had the familiar thought of, hey, I could write this while watching one. And then she actually did. Gwendolyn's novella, Miss Christmas, was turned into a Hallmark movie that premiered on the network this year. And she joins us now. Hi, Gwendolyn. Thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. Happy holidays to all the listeners.
Yeah. And happy holidays to you, too. We're talking with Naples author Gwendolyn Heasley about her novella, Miss Christmas, which was adapted into a Hallmark Christmas movie this year. You can become part of the conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, of course, I have to know, without giving too much away, can you tell me a little bit about the synopsis of Miss Christmas?
Sure. The synopsis is Miss Christmas. Her original name was actually Miss Christmas Tree. And her job is to find the Christmas tree for Rockefeller Center. In the movie, they change it to Chicago. And so she's in charge of finding the best tree ever. But when she finds the best tree ever, the owner doesn't want to give it away. And then, of course, they fall into also a romance. So it's kind of a story of holiday giving and what makes the perfect Christmas and tradition.
Okay. So where did you get the idea for that?
I actually wrote a picture book about the Rockefeller Center tree, and I was amazed by the whole process behind it. It actually is somebody's job to find the Rockefeller Center tree, and they spend all year scouting. They go on car trips. They look on satellites. But then they also get a box of letters every year. People send in letters, and they say, my tree is the perfect tree. And this is what happens in the novella, is a little boy sends in a letter, and he says, I have the perfect tree. And normally the trees are awful that people send in. You know, it has to be a certain height.
Like a Charlie Brown tree.
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. But actually she looks at the picture and it looks like it's the perfect tree. So she's desperate for a tree. And so she sets out for it. And actually in real life, one time they did find the tree from a box of letters. So it's inspired by true events.
Maybe it's because we're in Florida, but I can't imagine ever sending a letter saying, I have the perfect Rockefeller Christmas tree.
No, I agree. Usually they only come from like Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New York. It's a very small range.
Places where Christmas trees might grow.
Yes, exactly.
Much as we may put our lights on the palm trees.
Right.
So Hallmark Channel made some changes to the ending, you said, shifting the main character, Holly, from New York City to Chicago. Why do you think they moved it to Chicago?
I think the rights for Rockefeller Center were very hard to get. And so I think that was the initial decision. And I think luckily it didn't take away from the story to me. Because I think there's still, for every tree in, you know, a major city, that they have to go through this process.
Mm-hmm. So anyone who's a fan of the network, as you were, can admit that there's kind of a formula to
Definitely.
What is that formula for those who don't watch the Hallmark Channel?
Formula is there's usually one person who's very into Christmas. In this case, it would be Miss Christmas. And a lot of times they meet somebody who's not very into Christmas. And kind of the meeting sparks a chemistry. And usually they fall in love. And the person who's not very into Christmas finds the Christmas spirit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's pretty much like The Grinch. told over and over again. But if you – you know, sometimes it's a baking competition. Sometimes it's a, you know, sledding competition. It's always something very winter fantastic.
Winter fantastic. And then here you are in Naples.
True.
Writing something like
yes,
this.
Yes. And they actually, the president of Hallmark said that there will never be a story where there's not snow. All Hallmark movies will have snow. So I don't think we'll be seeing a Florida one anytime
soon. I don't know. They have those snow machines, right?
That's true. Maybe it could be about a snow festival in Florida.
Maybe bringing snow
yes,
to Florida.
That's okay, a great idea. Mm-hmm. No, you have a plot now.
You can go ahead and write that.
Okay.
I'll give you that.
Oh, thank you.
Intellectual property, no problem. It's all yours.
Perfect. Thanks.
So you mentioned earlier that there was a real Mr. Christmas tree.
Yes, so the man who was in charge of finding it for Rockefeller Center, people called him Mr. Christmas Tree. And his name was David Murbach, and he did it for 26 years before passing away. And I dedicated the novella to him.
Okay, so there's an actual guy. So you looked into some history.
Yes, I actually went to journalism school, so I really like to get very deep into the research and, you know, I like to read as much as I can and I like real life events.
And, you know, all of us journalists, we're kind of research nerds.
Definitely.
Yeah, we like really
digging in
there.
I love Google.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what we did before it.
Or Wikipedia. Thank you, Google. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Shout out to the internet. And smartphones.
Yes.
The immediate gratification of looking things up.
Yeah.
So do you think that there's a place for further stories maybe based on some other stories of the Rockefeller trees over the years?
I definitely think – I mean I even think continuation as far as the novellas go or also the movie. In the movie, she has an assistant who's wonderful. I would love to see the assistant get her own film. But yeah, there's many amazing stories. For instance, one year the tree was found at a convent. And so the Order of Nuns actually blessed the tree with holy water, and they had a little ceremony to say goodbye to the tree. And there are amazing stories like that every year in the process of finding the tree.
And that's part of the research that you dug
around
in. Yes,
I was just amazed by the stories. Some people had sleepovers in the trees before they say goodbye. Other families, you know, would have big parties for the whole neighborhood to say goodbye to the tree. One person, the tree was about to fall on their house, so they were so happy that they were going to come take it away.
That's much less expensive than a tree removal
exactly.
guy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
We are talking with Naples author Gwendolyn Heasley about her novella Miss Christmas, which was adapted into a Hallmark Christmas movie this year. You can join the conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So you mentioned earlier that you studied journalism and you're kind of a journalist, you know, research nerd like the rest of us. So how did you end up becoming a creative writer?
Well, I got out of journalism school in 2008 and I moved to New York City, and that was when the recession occurred and there just weren't that many jobs. I would, you know, have a hard time finding even like an internship at the time, and I was living with my parents. And so I kind of felt like a teenager a little bit. And so I wrote a book about a teenager in the recession. It was kind of a creative outlet. But, you know, I did a lot of research about how the recession was affecting teenagers at the time. And then it was right time, right place. I mean, there's so many great writers out there, but it was a very topical story. And it was one of the first recession stories to kind of come out. And so I got very lucky. And then I kind of went with the young adult career for about 8 years, and now I've moved on to more 20-somethings finding love.
So you wrote that first was a book?
Yeah, it's a novel. It was a young adult novel.
So you first wrote that, and then that was just like, oh, okay, well, this is going to be my path now.
Yeah, in some ways I found it easier than doing journalism because you can make stuff up, you know. There's a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah, but then you can always pull from facts and real history,
totally,
too.
Totally. There were some great articles at the time about how teenagers were moving in with grandparents, how, you know, the recession was affecting day-to-day life of teenagers. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens in the story as well.
So your first works were published through HarperCollins,
mm-hmm.
but this one was self-published. Why did you choose to do that?
Well, I think, one, I've become a little bit more impatient in my old age, and I had this Christmas story, and I loved it, and I wanted to, you know, it had started as a picture book, but it never ended up being published. My agent was like, it's okay.
Are you also an artist? Do you do the
– No, it was just the text.
Okay.
I wish I was an artist.
Yeah.
And so my agent was like, it's not the best picture book, so I kind of put it in a drawer, and then I had the idea to change it to a Hallmark film or Hallmark type novella. My goal was, though, to get a Hallmark film at the very end because it was inspired by Hallmark mm-hmm. films. And so I decided, you know, instead of asking permission and doing the whole query process, which can take years, I was like, you know, the Christmas novella story is a short season. People start reading them in October and they're done in January. I'm going to put it out and see what happens. And I was really happy and surprised by how many readers found it. And I could also price it at $1. Which is a lot, you know, more affordable than $10 is what usually it is on Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found a lot of readers, and it was really exciting.
So, and then you also used a pen name, Gigi Garrett, but you don't usually use that.
No, well, that was just in case it failed spectacularly. Then I'd be like, oh, that wasn't me.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
No, I also want to separate it from my young adult novel, since this was an adult novel, if that makes sense. Mm.
So then you got it self-published. You picked up some additional readers because of the affordability of it, which is great. Then how did you get it in front of the eyeballs of the people at Hallmark?
It sounds crazy, but I Googled email addresses and I emailed the president of Hallmark. And nothing happened. And then a month later, I got an email and she had forwarded it to the person who was in charge of production at the time. And he said, "This does sound like a Hallmark movie. Send it to me. I'll read it." And then they read it and they said, it's perfect for us and we hope to make it into a movie. And they optioned it.
So when they option it, what does that mean? Do they sign a contract saying here's some money and
yeah,
we're going to make this into a movie?
Yeah, they pay you about 10% of the total of what you'll get if they do make it into a movie. And then they have 2 years to make it. And usually movie options don't become films because, you know, films are so expensive to make. But Hallmark makes 50-plus films a year. So I thought my odds were maybe pretty good. They do 33 yeah. Christmas movies just this year alone. And so I was thrilled that they actually chose it to be a Christmas movie this year.
So they actually then went ahead and did it. I mean,
yep.
When did you learn that they were going to actually make it into a film? Did they contact you and let you know they were shooting it? Or
they filmed it in this August. So they filmed things right before and it came out in November.
Well,
so
they turned that around quick.
Yeah, really quick. So I didn't find out it was for sure going to be a movie until August when they started filming. I got a check on my doorstep.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is this something that you would advise people maybe to aspire to? Is it something to make a career out of? Or is it kind of a one-shot deal? Or
I mean, I hope to continue to work with Hallmark as a brand. I think it's an amazing brand. As I was telling someone, my 83-year-old grandmother-in-law, my husband's grandmother, had a party for Miss Christmas and all her friends came and all
– Grandmother-in-law?
You know, yes, my grandmother-in-law. I guess that's not a term. And then
kinda, I think, yeah.
Yeah, we could make it a term.
I think it is.
And then, you know, I have friends whose daughters are 4 years old. They also watched it. So it's really amazing to be part of a brand that can span 8 decades and people can watch it.
And still enjoy it.
Yes, and still enjoy it and understand it and relate to it.
Why do you think that is, that it can span so many decades?
Well, I think it's very family friendly. You know, TV has changed somewhat. Even like nighttime TV can be a little bit more edgy, not in a bad way. But I feel like everyone knows when they turn on Hallmark, it's going to be happy-go-lucky. It's going to end with a kiss and then it's going to fade to black. And so I think people know what they're going to get with Hallmark. And people love Hallmark for what it is. You know, people have the expectation of what they're going to see, and that's usually what they see, and they're very happy with it.
Mm. Yeah, happy endings are kind of good to be able to bank on every once in a while.
Yeah, especially during the holidays.
Yeah. Mm. So you said even though you were paid fairly as a novelist, the experience, now knowing screenwriting makes more money, has that actually made you consider leaning more towards screenwriting?
I would love to become a screenwriter. I would definitely have to pick up some new tools and everything, but I've always kind of thought more commercially, and I like ideas that are based in reality and kind of the current world. So if I could become a screenwriter, that would be another bucket list dream. You know, I have a lot of bucket list dreams.
How much do you have to change up the writing process when you're doing something for the screen instead of for a reader?
I think, you know, you have to be more concise with your words because you have less words sometimes in a screenplay. You know, you're describing the setting. You have like 2 sentences to try to described the setting, you know, whereas you could go on about a setting in a book for 10 pages and that would be.
And the memories it evokes in a character
exactly.
and things like that. But you can't say, have the character, wow, this reminds me of when I was a child.
Right. And I've always written first person. So that would be a different change because all my stories have been first person stories. So they've always been kind of taking place in someone's head. So it'd be a big leap for me. But, you know, I don't know if I'll be able to do it, but it's something I want to try for sure.
Yeah, I think that you should. So this is something that you do full time? Just the writing?
I do it full time. I taught college for a while when I lived in New York. I was like an adjunct professor and I loved that. And I loved working with, you know, teenagers, especially since I was writing for teenagers at the time. But I also have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. So I'd say they're my full time job. But, you know, I've always wanted to be a writer and I hope I'm always a writer.
I can't imagine they give you enough silence to concentrate and get in the writing zone.
No, they don't. There's no silence.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. Yeah, that's going to be a challenge.
Yes. And my daughter won't watch my movie because there's no princess.
Well, you could do a princess movie.
Yes, I was thinking maybe.
Those are popular.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really happening.
Mm-hmm.
So what message do you want fans to maybe take away from Miss Christmas?
I think, you know, it's really kind of the cliche message about the holidays, but it's better to give than receive.
Okay.
You know, that's really the heart of this story is about the spirit of giving.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sequel in the works? Have you gotten anything rolling yet?
I just had a book come out. Actually, it's a novella. This time it was not self-published. It was through Macmillan, and it's called Her Fake Engagement. And it's about girls who have fake bachelorette parties. So they pretend it's their bachelorette party to meet guys and to get attention. And then, of course, one of the girls who's the fake bachelorette, she meets a guy, but he thinks she's taken. So it's a really silly, fun, rom-com kind of story.
Yeah, I could see that going somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see that she has to convince him that she's not actually taken.
Yes,
or
exactly.
Pretend that they broke up. Or
right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could see how that could go.
So I had a lot of fun with that, yeah, because I've been to a lot of bachelorette parties, so I felt like I had a lot of material.
A lot of experience there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of friends getting married.
Yes, definitely.
I hear you. So where else do you mine for ideas? I mean, personal experiences. Obviously, you lived in New York City for a while when you first got out of college, and that probably had an impact on the going and seeing the Rockefeller Center tree.
Definitely,
right?
Definitely. I get a lot of ideas also from TV and movies. My first novel was kind of Friday Night Lights meets Gossip Girl. So a lot of authors are influenced by other authors, but I'm also very influenced by pop culture and TV. My most recent young adult novella was called Don't Call Me Baby, and it was about a girl whose mom is a mommy blogger. And so she's grown up her whole life on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely influenced by how much information people were putting on social media about their kids. And I was like, what's it going to be like to be 16 and look back and have this kind of history, you know, this online footprint that your parents have created for you?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of her exploring this process of how do you find your own identity online and in reality when your parents have kind of created this online persona for you.
There are so many different realities.
So many different realities.
There's who you are mm-hmm. in person, who you present yourself as online, right. And who others present yourself
yes,
as.
Yes, especially for children, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a pretty interesting thing to dive into.
Yeah, I loved writing it. It was because I got to study mommy blogs, and it was very – you know, this was about 4 years ago. So I think it was – you know, mommy blogs were huge. They still are, but it was kind of in the height of it. But my book was kind of a fast forward to what's going to happen in.
I feel like I might have heard of this book. Would I have heard of this book?
It took place in Naples, the story. It's called Don't Call Me Baby. So it's possible. I hope you've heard about it. That'd make me feel really good.
I feel like I've heard of it. It sounds like I've
– I have a copy. I'll show you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll have to check that out. But I mean, that's really an interesting thing to consider, you know, how online and social media plays into things. I think it would be kind of hard. I mean, I think it would be challenging for me personally to write a book that – deals on all those different levels of social media and then real life.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was not a mother when I wrote the novel. And then I had my daughter a year later. And so I was like, ooh, I was way too hard on the mom. But it was too late by that time. It was already published. But, you know, it influenced my choices on whether I should put my children online.
Yeah, it made you probably think twice about
– Yeah, and I really don't put them online. And I think – part of it was that research process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm rethinking all my Facebook posts.
I mean, everyone does. I'm not trying to.
But I have not mommy
Facebook
blogged.
Shame anyone. It's different for everybody. It's like a parenting choice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really an interesting one. So has Miss Christmas already aired or is it going to air again?
So it aired the first time on November 5th and it will air again on Christmas at – I believe it is midnight or 1 a.m. So if you're staying up late wrapping presents – tune in. I think it might also be on Hallmark On Demand if you have that.
And you can always TiVo, right?
Yes. And they'll keep replaying it, which is the great thing about Hallmark is they keep those movies and they'll play it next year and it kind of becomes part of this Hallmark canon.
Did you like the people they picked to play the roles?
Yes. Holly. Holly is played by Brooke D'Orsay and she is fantastic. She embodies Miss Christmas because Miss Christmas is this Christmas spirit in, 20-something. So they did a great job. And the guy's from Buffy. He's really cute, Mark Balukas. They did a great job. He's super handsome and he plays a hardworking farmer really well. So they did a great job. So thank you, Hallmark.
All right, great. Well, that's all the time we have for now. But thank you so much for joining us in the studio to talk with us about Miss Christmas, Gwendolyn Heasley. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And we're going to end this hour with a book review. Author John Grisham is nothing if not prolific, producing a book or sometimes even two a year. This year's offering, Camino Island, is a slight departure from the usual. It's still a Grisham thriller, but the author has traded in courthouse hallways for a quiet island off of Florida's coast. Sally Bissell has this review.
John Grisham certainly doesn't need any extra publicity from the likes of me. But this heist caper that takes place on a fictional island off the coast of Jacksonville, Florida, is just too much fun not to recommend. Rumor has it that Grisham and his wife were driving to their Amelia Island home from Mississippi and dreamed up the plot along the way. The crime is executed in the first chapter. Five participants, some who've never been involved in nefarious adventures before, create a diversion that seems, oh, so possible, break into the vaults in the basement of the Princeton University Library, and make off with five manuscripts, original handwritten novels by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Their value is incalculable. A foolish neophyte's mistake results in evidence being left at the scene, and the FBI is all over the case within 24 hours. Then the trail grows cold. Grisham introduces us to Bruce Cable, a 20-something English major with little direction in life, whose estranged father died and left behind something more exciting than a few thousand dollars. Signed first editions of classic American novels. Bruce spends a summer on the pristine beaches of Camino Island, reading War and Peace and formulating an idea. Bay Books is born and becomes the go-to place to see and be seen on the island. Mercer Mann had a successful first novel, but she is now locked in writer's block hell, plagued by student debt and losing her adjunct professor's job at Chapel Hill. Mann is ripe for recruitment by an insurance firm that's investigating the Princeton Library's loss. Knowing that Mercer inherited a beach house on Camino Island from her grandmother, also understanding that Bruce Cable is an inveterate womanizer with a penchant for budding authors, the agent, Elaine, proposes a deal to Mercer that she simply can't refuse. What ensues is a rollicking game of cat and mouse, in which we're never quite sure which party is actually the guilty one and who's playing whom. Along the way, we're taken into the fascinating international world of book collecting and preservation, with an added bonus of Provençal antique acquisition. The shady characters are so likable that we begin to root for them to get away with it, laughing all the way to the bank, kind of like the author himself.
That was Sally Bissell with her review of John Grisham's new novel, Camino Island. We'll have more of her reviews in the new year here on Gulf Coast Live. And that's all the time we've got. Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone, John Davis, and yours truly. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1. WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM. NPR for Southwest Florida.
But what a sight, because it's author's night and the place looks like a who's who. Now I'm pounding the yuzu.
With Mario Puzo.
Who's the funny fella?
W.P. Kinsella.
Who brought the cat?
With Margaret Atwood.
Who needs a shave?
He's Robertson Davies.
Hot dog, they started a food fight. Selling moose all over the scene.
Spilled some dressing on Doris Lessing. These writer types are a scream. I like to go out dancing. My baby loves a bunch of authors. We'll be together for ages.
Eating and sleeping and.
Eating and sleeping and.
Eating and sleeping and.
Turning pages.
Yeah!